Kia ora, Sean. Thank you very much. I will hand off to our third speaker, Dr. Janine Duckworth. Janine?
Kia ora, Janine Duckworth here from Manaaki Whenua Lanky Research. I'm going to talk today about our fertility control research that's been run in New Zealand. It's quite a large number of groups involved as part of the National Research Session for Possum Biocontrol, which includes Lanky Research and Ag Research, as well as a lot of other collaborating agencies at universities of Otago and as well as Australia and Austria. As you can imagine, this sort of research is pretty much a team effort. Why fertility control? There's plenty of reasons why we want to control vertebrate pests in New Zealand. The reasons we want to look at fertility control is because it's basically looking at the scale and cost of the problems and the concerns with current methods. Charles and Sean have talked about some of the technical issues, such as non-target impacts, environmental risks, and also there are also concerns from the public and from international groups that brings pressure to reduce our use of some of the toxins such as 1080. But we also need to keep in mind that possums and stoats are a problem that are unique to New Zealand, and as Charlie said, there no one else is going to undertake the research we need to support our need for new control technologies. This comes very clear when things such as 1080 become under considerable pressure. For instance, the Animal Health Board will spend about $180,000 on doing public consultation meetings in order to get approval to use 1080, where they do get approval. So it's not the public resistance to some of our technologies. It has not just direct costs, but also has some indirect costs. And clearly, managers need new tools, and the public want us to use new tools. And fertility comes to the front time and time again because of it's a non-lethal control. The public says it is humane, and we know that we have the potential to make it species-specific, and the high public acceptability of such techniques keeps it pretty much in in our desire for an ideal control tool. Saying that, we don't expect that fertility control will be the silver bullet. It would need to be used as an integrated pest management package. And if we look at this slide here, as Charlie said, current control operations are kind of boom and bust operations. If we look at the blue line, which represents the numbers of possums in an area, I've put an arrow here, a red dot there, that indicates in a control operation that we can cause, using 1080 or other lethal control, we can cause large reductions in our population numbers. But the problem comes in that in the following years, possum populations increase. They gradually increase, so that within 3 to 5 years, we're looking at a level of possum population where we meet the damage threshold, and we have to go back in again and control that population again. Where fertility control would work is, if you look at the green line, you'll see that with 50% sterility in a population, we can extend the time between possum control operations from 2 to 3 to 5 years up to about 12 years. And that has many obvious advantages, including reducing the amount of toxins we use, reducing the risk to non-target species and of the environmental contamination, and also raising the public acceptability of possum control in general. We believe that we can the techniques we're looking at will allow us to do it at fairly comparable costs, because a lot of the control operation costs are actually in the price of applying the baits, the helicopters, the bait stations, rather than in the raw material that is required to go in as the control agent, being a fertility control or a lethal control agent. But I just need to make it clear that it needs to be part of a integrated pest management system. If we were able to come up with something that, like this pale blue line, of showing 80% sterility, which would be, we're not sure if we could achieve that level of sterility, but it would be a very long period of time between lethal control operations with all the advantages that that would bring. But at this stage, we're looking at the 50% level as something we think we can achieve, and that's part of our product specifications of a of something that we could use in the field. I'll just talk a little about how much progress we've made in this time, actually. I'll talk about what people want. You can imagine that what people want is fairly much common sense. They want to be specific to the target species. They want it to be humane. They want it to be effective. They want it to be well-tested so they understand what the risks and benefits are likely to be, and they want a full public information consultation and involvement. And these are all very much common sense things that I think we can all agree on. They also they want the concerns of the Indigenous people, wherever the control to be applied to be addressed, as well as to the international agencies, because we have to be aware that anything we do in New Zealand is fit to have any impacts in Australia. We would have to have some sort of level of control. The other thing that we need to be community groups also want is they'd like to have techniques that they could use themselves for possum control. And these are the sort of things we've kept in mind when we've moved towards developing a fertility control agent. For fertility control, the first step the groups have had, is to find suitable targets. And through the National Research Centre and through the late 1990s, a lot of groups were looking at targets which, if we could interfere with that part of reproduction, would cause infertility. They looked at gonadal development, which is the development of the testis and the ovary in young animals, and Ag Research did a lot of work at this. At this stage, they had not been able to find a suitable target. They've also looked at the process of fertilisation, what allows the sperm to bind to the egg and fertilise the egg to form an embryo. That's what we've been doing, and I'll talk a little bit about that in detail later. There's a group in Melbourne that's done a lot of work on embryonic development, and they've been looking at some specific coat proteins that are important when once an egg is fertilised. We know if we immunise against some of those that we can severely compromise the fertility of those individuals. And finally, Ag Research has also had quite a long project on hormonal control of reproduction, and that's the hormone GnRH. And both the hormone GnRH and the zona pellucida, which is the egg coat layer around the egg, those have been the basis of some commercially available vaccines overseas, and those are the areas we've taken further forward the most. Unfortunately, GnRH is not that species specific. It tends to be very similar between species, but the zona pellucida vaccines look to be at least that we can get something that is marsupial, if not possum specific, and I'll talk a little bit more about that now. So the zona pellucida is the egg coat around the possum egg. It's a protein that's only found in the egg, and there's quite a lot of differences in the protein structure between different species. For instance, possum zona pellucida is only 25 to 52% similar to Eutherian species, and depending on which part of the protein you choose, you can make it quite specific to the possum or the marsupial species. If you get a good immune response, that's what immunogenic means, and able to induce an immune response, then you can impair fertility. And the main way that happens is because the antibodies coat the surface of the zona pellucida and stop the sperm from binding and entering and fertilising the egg. Also, you can get an immune response within the ovary, which causes the oocytes to be lost. There are three main proteins that make up this layer, and we've been testing them in possums over the last few years, initially by injection. And these are the proteins we've looked at. ZP3, we've looked at two types of ZP2, and then we've looked at some small parts of ZP3 and small parts of ZP2. And when we immunise possums by injection, we get very large reductions in the fertility of those possums. The interesting thing about those these same proteins as when we give the same vaccines to a non-marsupial mammal, a mouse, or to an avian species, a chicken, we find that there's no effect on their fertility. And that suggests to us that we've made a big step forward in finding something that is possum or marsupial specific. And that took us to our next step, because although we have targets, you also need to have ways to deliver those targets. And there's been a considerable amount of effort gone into looking at different ways of delivering things. And this is not an exhaustive list, this is just giving you a few examples. We've spent a lot of our time working on what bait-delivered bacterial ghosts, and this is an example of a non-living vaccine. And bacterial ghosts are the empty cell envelopes of gram-negative bacteria like E. coli. And what happens is we can express the zonas elucida proteins within the E. coli, and then we also express a lysis gene. And what that does is that lysis gene, when it triggers, kills the bacteria. And you can just see a little puff of material there, which indicates the contents of the cell being expelled, and you end up with the empty cell of the bacteria, and that is the basis of the vaccine. So it doesn't have any DNA. And when you freeze dry it, it's a very stable non-living vaccine. So when the animal is immunised against this vaccine, it sees the E. coli as foreign, but it also sees the zona pellucida, the ZP proteins, as foreign. So when we gave the bacterial ghost vaccines orally or via an aerosol, we've been able to reduce the fertility of the animals by 30 to 40% for 3 to 4 months, so that's very promising results. But at that stage, that's not at the level which would give us something that we could use in the field. So we've still got some ways to go before we could use these non-living vaccines in, as an effective long-term control strategy. In the meantime, other groups have been looking at non-transmissible vectors. Now, vectors are living viruses, but there's two groups, or living organisms, and they there's two groups of organisms that that people have looked at. The one we've looked at most recently is based on the rabies vaccinia virus. Now, the thing about this vaccinia virus, it's actually the basis of the smallpox vaccine that has eliminated smallpox around the world, so a lot of people have been exposed to it. What it does, it causes a short-term infection, but it doesn't multiply within the infected animal, and it doesn't spread between animals. So it's not letting the genie out of the bottle. It has its effects only in the animal that's eaten the bait that had the vaccine in it. At the moment, we're currently assessing to see whether it's suitable for use in possums, whether it causes a short-term infection in possums. So that is an early-ish development, but we think it has quite a lot of potential, because worldwide, for rabies control, they are using these vaccinia-based vaccines to treat raccoons and foxes throughout the US and foxes in the Europe, and it's been able to bring rabies and wildlife under control. So this is a GMO, a transgenic transgenic vaccine, but it's as I said, it's non-infectious. It only infects the animal that that is exposed. At this stage, there's been no work done except some very small amount of work done in containment, as I said, this is at the beginning stages of the research process. There's also been investigations of transmissible systems where we could use a possum-specific nematode or virus, a nematode being a gut worm, and we found a couple of possum-specific nematodes that would be suitable carriers. But this work has been on hold for several years because the funding has been limited, and there was uncertainty as whether the public was ready to accept a fully transmissible system. And I think at this stage, that research will remain on hold unless there's some change in the technology that would mean that we could, it wouldn't be letting the genie out of the bottle, that we had better control of a vectored vaccine system. So there's a range of ideas out there for possums. The most promising at this stage is the bacterial ghosts and the non-transmissible vaccinia virus vaccine. But these are probably not going to be ready for field testing for 2 to 5 years at a minimum. As well as the post-possum reproductive control, we've also been quite a bit of work looking at control of stoats, because 1080, traditionally 1080 has been used in eggs for limited stoat control, and although and Charlie's talked about some of the other options they're looking for at for stoats. We're interested in stoats is because they're a major predator in New Zealand wildlife, and the number of stoats you have in an environment is driven by their breeding success. They have a very large litter size, 6 to 13. And we know from our modelling that fertility control is effective as lethal control for a short-lived animal with a large litter size such as a stoat. We've also been interested because stoats have a very unique reproductive strategy. The females are pregnant 9 months of the year, and we've been identifying Achilles heels for these animals, looking at what it is about their reproduction which makes them vulnerable. And we've looked at we're testing a couple of chemosterolants as well as something that interferes with pregnancy. When I say these animals are pregnant, they mate, and then they have what's called a blastocyst, which is about 200 cells. Embryo inside the uterus, and that stays in diapause. It stops growing for about 7 to 8 months, and that blastocyst, that sleeping embryo, is a very useful target, potential target for an animal such as stoat. And finally, I just wanted to say that in addition to the fertility control work, there's other the vaccine work. We're also looking at some oral chemosterolants, but these are in early days. But we've got an oral chemosterolant that we're looking at, which is long-acting and looks like it's called permanent sterility. There's also alternatives to other alternatives to 1080, such as possum TB vaccines that are likely to be helpful in areas where TB levels have been kept down, and if they want to keep them down on the long term. It may be that possum TB vaccine will be useful around the edge of control areas as well. And also Landcare has several species-specific toxins it's working on, as well as smarter ways to use 1080. I think at the moment the most advances we've made in the last few years are not to reduce our use of 1080. It's not been so much to use substitutes, but to actually reduce the amount of 1080 we use and use it more effectively. And we've gone from 20 to 10 to 5 kilograms of hectare of 1080 for control operations down to 1 to half a kilo to 1 kilo. And this is to do with smarter use of 1080. And the same sort of research continues, either using additional additives to conventional toxins to improve their animal welfare profile and carcass specificity. And another place that we're continuing going to use 1080 and are likely to use more is because the RHD effects are decreasing, we are going to need to look at better strategies and improved practices for rabbit control. And if anyone wants to ask further questions on them, I can give them contacts to people they may wish to talk to. And thank you for the opportunity to speak, and that is the end of my presentation.
All right, thank you very much, Janine. I'm going to unmute all the participants. Just bear with me for a moment, and then I will open it up to questions. Just 1 second here. Are there any questions from the floor? Most of you are muted. There we go. Now we're all set. All right. Are there any questions from the journalists who have dialed in?
Yeah, it's Will here from Radio New Zealand.
Go ahead, Will.
Hey, Dasha. Hey. I'm just wondering, there's a US lobby out there that it's trying to push for the banning of the production of TN80 in the US. How is that influencing or pressuring researchers here to get on with it and, come up with a solution fairly quickly?
Darcy, do you want me to have a go at that question?
Go ahead.
The pressure that comes up on 1080 in the US is an annual phenomena. It's the same senator that raises the issue each year. It's not a new issue, but I think there are a number of pressures that are encouraging us to press ahead with alternatives, and I think I touched on that. There's the international trade, there's the welfare issue, etc., and there's just having a greater variety of toxins, baits and traps in the toolbox so that we don't need to use so much 1080, and then smarter delivery systems so we extend the use of ground control tools. So certainly that's one of a number of pressures.
And I think, this is Janine here, I think that was brought to bear when they had the 1080 review several years ago, that we needed to have additional tools in the toolbox. With the fertility control work, there is a lot of public support for that sort of work, but actually that whole research area is uncertain at this stage, as the funding ends on the projects at the end of September for the work that we've talked about. So at this stage there may be some pressure to look for alternatives, for fertility control alternatives, but we're not sure how well that will translate into research support.
Right. Thank you. Go ahead. Is there another question?
I've got one for Janine.
Could you identify yourself, please?
Hi, it's Amy from the press.
Hi, Amy.
Hi, Janine. I'm quite curious about those vaccines you were talking about for possums. How would you deliver those, like, over a wide area?
The bait vaccines, the bacterial ghosts?
Yeah, the ones that, you know, would stop them from being
breeding.
Able to, yeah.
The bacterial ghosts would be delivered in a bait as well.
Okay, yeah.
Probably initially through bait feeders. We know that we can, we've done quite a lot of modelling and field trials. We know that we can get to 95% of the individuals in an area using very few bait stations, and we know that more than 90% of the animals will take at least one bait within 7 to 10 days. So
yep,
it'll be periodic baiting.
Go ahead, another question.
Neil Keating from Rural News. Charles, have you settled to the rigours of the approval process, especially via IRMA? How's that running? Is the bureaucratic tide running stronger than it used to, or what?
Okay, so that question was about the regulatory process.
Yes.
I guess one of the reasons why it is hard, a hard graft, and hard research. I mean, it's almost easier to carry on with the tool that you've got rather than introduce new tools. The hurdle through New Zealand Food Safety Authority and IRMA is a huge challenge for New Zealand research groups, and I guess that's why we've got a consortium of Lincoln University, private industry, other universities and international collaborators. I think I alluded to something like a 20-stage process, and for two compounds, zinc phosphide and PAP, we're up to about stage 18 out of 20. I mean, one can understand why it has to be a vigorous process, and of course it would be more vigorous even still for something that was going to be used aerially. So I think you're absolutely right. It's a huge challenge. You're producing the same database that you might be, or a similar database almost, as you would be for a new drug, or certainly an agrochemical that you would be applying to food, and yet, of course, food crops. And yet, of course, here we are with things like PAP, which are used in bait stations for remotely controlling stokes. And having to go through two agencies, both New Zealand Food Safety Authority as well as IRMA, is a challenge. and I mean, it would be the same for Janine with her research. Right from the get-go, the animal ethics approvals, the approvals for trials in cages, approvals for trials in months in the field. It takes months and months even to get approval for these level of trials, let alone the final approval. So yeah, it certainly presents challenges for the researchers, but I mean, that's, I guess, why you've got to be focused and make sure your research provides the sort of quality data that will enable registration. I don't know if that answers the question, but...
Yes, well enough.
Great. Do you have another question?
I've got another one, probably, Dasha. It's Will here again at Radio New Zealand.
Yes, go ahead, Will.
I think at the end you said, Charles, that we're 3 to 6 years away from getting a viable alternative out there once stages, I guess, 19 and 20 are through. Out of all those options we've looked at, what's the best or the most likely ones that are going to come through as the ones we might see out there in use? Are there any that stand out?
I'll say that last bit again.
Are there any that stand out of those different options you've provided us with?
Okay. So I think it's basically probably over the next 1 to 6 years we'll see those things emerging. And I picked some examples quite deliberately. In terms of new toxins that are in the conventional mode, then, I mean, we'd be hopeful that zinc phosphide comes through in a paste form over the next 6 to 12 months. Now, that'll be just in its first formulation. And if you think that we've spent, say, 60 years refining the use of 1080 and getting sewing rates down, as Janine was referring to, then this is the reason I say 3 to 6 years, is because before we get the most out of something like zinc phosphide, we'll need some more field experience and field research. So in terms of picking winners, if you like, well, zinc phosphide's one, then the PAP coming through, we'd hope to have that in the next 6 months. But again, it's just in a crude bait formulation. I think the exciting thing I was alluding to was those delivery systems that would carry on doing the control when you weren't there. The resetting toxin delivery systems would be 2 to 3 to 6 years out. So the zinc phosphide PAP I deliberately chose, and I think it is quite exciting that we've got something like sodium nitrite, which is a common meat preservative, which actually kills possums humanely, has an antidote, which is methylene blue, the same antidote for PAP. So those are the three I'd see as coming along in the shorter to medium term. And the reason I say 3 to 6 months is because, you know, these will just be in their crude state in the first formulation, if you like, the first product to market, as opposed to maybe in a variety of different bait types to be used more constructively. But it isn't just saying, right, zinc phosphide is the alternatives to 1080. It's actually having a number of different toxin traps, etc., that will really reduce the need for so much 1080 use.
Charlie, hey, it's Shaw Ogilvie here. Charlie, I'm just wondering if you want to just add a low-dose cholecalciferol onto that list as well, or with that?
Yeah, no, Sean, you're absolutely right. I mean, cholecalciferol, being vitamin D3, very well researched. Some of your grandmothers may be taking vitamin D3 to suppress osteoporosis and keep the calcium metabolism on track. And it is just something where the active ingredient is just a wee bit too expensive for us, but now we've reduce the concentration required in baits and we still get the same efficacy in possums and rodents, then that's quite a good option. And again, some of the work that we've done with Sean's been around multi-species baits, which with cholecalciferol and zinc phosphide, which will take out possums, rats and mice simultaneously, which is quite important from a conservation perspective.
Thank you.
Excellent. Do we have a final question for our panelists?
It's Rebecca from the ODT. Just curious, do any of those that you've just talked about work on rabbits, or has there been any investigations on that front?
Absolutely. To be honest, the straight answer is we haven't. I mean, we haven't been targeting rabbits with our research intensively, but all of those compounds, zinc phosphide will certainly be effective on rabbits. The replacement for bradykinin, which I didn't allude to, which is a Kolikov of kimotetralar combination, will work on rabbits. The PAP for stoats won't, and sodium nitrite might well do.
Right.
The trick, if you like, and it's coming back to that earlier question on registration, is to get the active ingredient registered through IRMA and the New Zealand Food Safety Authority, get it accepted as one species, and then all things being equal and the product or the active working with to the required standard of safety and efficacy, is then to extend it to other species.
Excellent.
Rabbits haven't been forgotten. But they, to be honest, again, they're not the area where there's been a lot of funding. Force funding has targeted us just towards possums and predators, and Animal Health Board funding targets us towards TB vector control.
Okay.
Rabbits are, to some extent, neglected in this alternative toxin research, but not from want of recognizing there is a problem there.
Okay. All right, thank you. There was quite a bit of detailed information in our panelists' slides, so I have now, they're up in the Science Media Center Resource Library. If you'd like to download a PDF copy to refer to that, you can access that. If you have any trouble logging into the Resource Library, just get in touch with the Science Media Center. We will also be posting a recording that we've made of this briefing to our public website very soon after we finish. So I would like to thank all three of our panelists very much for their presentations. And thank you to all the journalists who have dialed in. If you'd like to get in touch with these researchers for follow-up, just call the SMC and we will put you in touch. Thanks very much, and that concludes our briefing.